Hi, everyone. Welcome to Every Great Adventure Begins as a Dream, where I inspire you, my fellow baby boomers, to get out there and see the world. I'm your host, Donna, and although I've traveled a lot, there's still a lot of world out there for me to see. Since I'm not getting any younger, I've got to keep going to see as much as I can before I can't. So let's dream together and plan your next great adventure. Today's adventure, India, Mumbai, and the Golden Triangle. The Taj Mahal was one destination on my bucket list that I didn't think would get crossed off. But as luck would have it, we ended up on a cruise that ended in Mumbai and had a post-cruise tour to India's Golden Triangle, including the Taj Mahal. I was able to convince Art that this was the easiest way for us to get to see the Taj Mahal, and we really should include it. Truth be told, I don't know that we'll ever get to that part of the world again, so I'm glad we managed to include it. I'll do a podcast on the rest of the cruise at a future date. Today, I'll be focusing on our visit to Mumbai and India's Golden Triangle. It was the end of our Malabar Coast cruise on Regent Seven Seas Voyager. The last night aboard our floating home was spent in port in Mumbai. You know, I really appreciate when a cruise that ends in an interesting port gives passengers one last night in that port. It allows us time to visit the city, at least a little, before having to begin the journey home. Controlled chaos. That was my first impression of Mumbai. With a population density just over 2.5 times that of New York City, it was crowded, noisy, smoggy, and dusty. The traffic was horrendous. Then we got off the motor coach and reality set in. We were on a tour and had to keep up with the leader. Negotiating the crowd was akin to riding in bumping cars with people weaving in and out, and often you'd stop to let someone by and the person behind you would gently bump into you. People around us were speaking languages that were completely unfamiliar to me, and then I'd hear some English thrown in the mix. It was necessary to remain alert, especially near the street, as it would be all too easy to step in front of one of those small motorbikes that simply appeared out of nowhere. I'm not sure how people knew that this light-haired, blue-eyed, pale-skinned girl was a tourist, but they sure did. People stopped us as we were walking, attempting to get us to buy something or give them money. They would give us blessings and tie little thread bracelets to our wrists. As most spoke English, it was easy to say no, but they were persistent, and it would usually take several tries before they finally gave up. We weaved through the crowded square to the Gateway of India. The monumental arch, completed in 1924, was constructed to commemorate the 1911 visit of King George V and Queen Mary. It's a large tourist attraction in Mumbai and near a very busy passenger ferry port. Like any bustling tourist destination, visitors need to be aware of pickpockets and other petty thieves here. We had some time to walk around and take photos of the monument as we waited for our ferry to take us over to Elephanta Island. Some of the ferries looked to be in better shape than others, but we made the trip from the busy port with no problem. Upon arrival on the island, there's a small train into which passengers are tightly packed, allowing you to ride to the base of the hill if you'd rather not walk. From the base, it's a climb of 120 steps to get to the caves. At the base of the hill are numerous snack bars and shops. Shops also line the stairway up to the caves, so there's plenty of opportunity to shop, if that's your thing. There are small monkeys everywhere, and they are more than willing to take any food you may have carelessly tucked into a bag or your pocket. If you've ever been to Gibraltar, they reminded me of the monkeys there. Our guide had purchased a bottle of orange drink and explained that the monkeys really like it and will take it right out of your hand if you're not paying attention. Then someone asked her a question, and as she was talking, she slowly dropped her hand, with the drink in it, down by her side. It was amazing how quick a little monkey ran over to grab it. Fortunately, someone saw what was about to happen and got the guide's attention just as the monkey put its hand on the drink. There were a few other animals on the island as well, a few cows and lots of what appeared to be stray dogs. Elephanta Island was really interesting. Art nor I had never heard of this UNESCO World Heritage Site before our trip. The caves were carved into the hill to serve as temples. In addition to pillars, the walls of the nearly 55,000 square feet of caves are elaborately carved with images from Indian mythology. Over the years, the carvings have been damaged, but were restored in the 1970s. Today, Elephanta Island is a very popular tourist destination and certainly worth seeing. One interesting little tidbit we picked up from our tour guide. The current thinking is that a statue made with multiple heads or more than two arms is to indicate movement. So, when you see a statue with six arms, that indicates the arms are moving up and down. Three heads, left profile, center, and right profile, indicate the head is turning from side to side. The next morning, we disembarked the Seven Seas Voyager and began our tour of what is known as the Golden Triangle of India. The Golden Triangle is simply the tourist circuit between the cities of New Delhi, Agra, and Jaipur. Before I proceed, I'll apologize now for any mispronunciations I may make in the remainder of this podcast. Our first stop was in Jaipur, also known as the Pink City. Although not actually pink, many of the buildings were constructed of red sandstone, and others were coated with an ochre color to welcome the Prince of Wales in 1905, and has remained so ever since. Although busy, it's not as large as Mumbai and did not feel nearly as chaotic. Traffic was still crazy, but we found that to be true just about every place we visited in India. Jaipur is named after its founder, Sawa Jai Singh II, a Rajput king. Jai Singh was known for his intellect and had a great interest in mathematics, architecture, and astronomy. Based on his work designing the city, he was heralded as a keen planner. After founding the city in 1927, Jai Singh began the construction of the city palace where he and his family lived. In fact, his descendants still reside there today. Our tour began with the city palace. Naturally, one of the first things we came upon was a snake charmer. Anyone who knows me knows that snakes are my least favorite of all God's creatures. They just give me the creeps. Anyway, I watched long enough to take a photo and then went on my way through the gateway, elaborately painted with flowers and vines, into the palace. Inside the palace, we visited the Mubarak Mahal, where the royal family would receive their guests. This building, which is identical on all four sides, now houses museum offices on the first floor and a textile gallery on the second. Made of white marble and beige stone, the balcony railings and trim work are delicately carved. While at the palace, I had a mehndi, or henna design, placed on my hand. I don't recall exactly how long it lasted. I don't think it was more than a few weeks, though. As I mentioned earlier, Jai Singh was an avid astronomer. He constructed five different astronomical observation sites in India, some of which no longer exist. The site, called a Jantar Mantar, built at the city palace between 1728 and 1734, is very well preserved. It's said that the instruments, which include the world's largest sundial, were extremely accurate. In addition to telling time, the instruments are used for a variety of purposes, such as predicting eclipses or locating celestial bodies, all with the naked eye. This particular Jantar Mantar is also a UNESCO World Heritage Site. If you've watched The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, a good deal of it was filmed in Jaipur. If you haven't seen the movie, I do recommend it. It's a movie to which we baby boomers can relate. The sequel wasn't quite as good, but still entertaining. We drove by the Hawa Mahal, another part of the city palace. This elaborate five-story structure made of pink and red sandstone has 953 windows which face the road. Each window is covered with a decorative lattice that allowed the royal women inside the ability to watch the outside world and not be seen without their face coverings. Unfortunately, the Hawa Mahal was encased in bamboo scaffolding while undergoing renovation. Art said it reminded him of the scaffolding he used to see in Saigon. All I know is it didn't look very secure to me. Riding in the motor coach from Jaipur to Agra was an eye-opening experience, allowing us a small peek into everyday life in the country. As we traveled through the more rural areas, we saw more and more people using animals for transportation. Of course there were cows, which were not always contained. Our motor coach did have one close call with a cow on the road. Don't forget, cows are considered sacred animals in India, and to have hit one would have been a big issue. I'm not sure why, but I never associated India with camels. Yet, here they were, pulling carts and even being herded along the road. Coming from the U.S., it was jarring to see what we considered unsafe practices used without a thought. rickshaws stuffed with more people than they were intended to carry, children being transported in an open trailer behind a tractor. The most interesting was what appeared to be a family of four on a motorcycle. Well, at least the driver was wearing a helmet. As we drove along, we noticed little huts alongside the road. After seeing a few of them, we finally figured out what they were: stacks of dung patties to be used as fuel. The dried patties had been placed in a small straw hut. It looked as though anyone could just walk up and take what they needed. Our first stop in Agra was the Agra Fort, the seat of the Mughal Empire for many years. This large fort, constructed of red sandstone, was built between 1565 and 1573 and is still in active use today. Essentially a walled city in its day, the fort is also a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It was from the Agra Fort that we had our first glimpse of the Taj Mahal, one of the most famous and recognizable buildings in the world. From Agra Fort, we went into a factory where they made inlaid products. It was here we were provided a demonstration of just how the tiny pieces of semi-precious stone are ground and shaped prior to being inlaid in marble. Of course, we all know that the Taj Mahal was built by the ruler of the Mughal Empire as a memorial to his favorite wife. Well, that's the short story. Here's a little more background. And since conflicting information does abound, I'm using the official website of the Taj Mahal as my source. Shah Jahan was the fifth Mughal emperor and reigned from 1628 to 1658. In 1607, at the age of 15, he was betrothed to the young woman who would become Mumtaz Mahal. She was 14 at that time. However, the court astrologers predicted they would have a happy marriage only if they married on May 10th of 1612. So they waited. During their five-year wait, Shah Jahan took two other wives. There is conflicting information on how many wives Shah Jahan had. The official website lists 9, but other sources state there were as many as 11. One thing that is not disputed is that it was his third wife, upon whom he bestowed the title Mumtaz Mahal Begum, or chosen one of the palace, that was Shah Jahan's true love. His constant companion, she traveled with him throughout the empire during their marriage. During that 19-year marriage, Shah Jahan and Mumtaz had 13 children together. Mumtaz hemorrhaged to death after bearing her 13th child. When Mumtaz died in 1631, Shah Jahan was inconsolable and mourned her death for 2 years. It was during this time that he designed the Taj Mahal, or Crown Palace. Before her death, Mumtaz asked 4 things of her husband. He should build a tomb for her, he should remarry, he should be kind to their children, and each year on the anniversary of her death, he should visit her tomb. Okay, now you know a little more about Shah Jahan and Mumtaz. Now I'll share our visit and a little more about my experience. Our visit to the Taj Mahal was scheduled for the early morning. The complex opens 1/2 hour before sunrise, and we were there plenty early. Art and I joined the queue with hundreds of others. Once the gates opened, all bags were checked by security, and we passed through a metal detector as well. Once through security, we regrouped with our guide, who provided us with an overview of the grounds. We were then free to roam the grounds on our own, with a designated time to meet up for our return to the hotel. In a few steps, we arrived at the main gate, perfectly framing the mausoleum, which was tinted slightly pink by the rising sun. After passing through the gate, I was stunned. I had no idea how large the entire complex was. Even though the mausoleum was completed in 1648, the remainder of the site, as we see it today, took an additional 5 years to complete. Over 22,000 construction workers and artisans worked for a total of 22 years to bring Shah Jahan's vision to reality. The large reflecting pool in front of the mausoleum was, unfortunately, dry as it was being repaired during our visit. There are large grassy areas which used to house gardens on either side of the reflecting pool. The gardens were replaced with grass by the British during a restoration project in the early 1900s. I was surprised to see 2 buildings flanking the mausoleum, a mosque and a guest house. The 2 buildings mirror one another and are constructed of red sandstone. I had no idea there were any other buildings in the complex. I don't recall ever seeing pictures of them. As we made our way up to the mausoleum, I began to realize just how big it is. The central dome alone is nearly 115 feet tall. Each of the four minarets check in at 130 feet. In all, the entire building stands 240 feet in height. Next time you see photos, look for people so you can get a better perspective on its size. It's obvious in all the photos that the mausoleum is constructed of white marble. What you don't see is the intricate, detailed decoration. The inlay work is most remarkable. As many as 28 different precious and semi-precious stones were used in the calligraphy and floral decorations on the walls. Some of the pieces of stone used in the inlay are no bigger than a fingertip, each one handmade and placed in the marble. The interior includes marble-carved lattice. In places, the marble is carved with bas-reliefs. The long line we were in moved slowly through the mausoleum, which was fine with me as it allowed us to really appreciate the fine workmanship involved in the construction of this beautiful testament of love. Shah Jahan was able to keep all but the last of the four promises he made to his beloved Mumtaz. In 1658, he was overthrown by his own son, Aurangzeb, and imprisoned in Agra Fort for the last 8 years of his life. I'm not sure if it was in mockery or compassion, but his son did allow him a view of the Taj Mahal from his confinement. Shah Jahan was finally reunited with Mumtaz upon his death in internment next to her within the mausoleum. Unfortunately, the Taj Mahal did not remain unscathed during the Indian Rebellion of 1857. The mausoleum was defaced by British soldiers and government officials. By the end of the 19th century, the Taj Mahal had fallen into disrepair when Lord Curzon, the British viceroy, ordered its restoration, which was completed in 1908. Today, the Taj Mahal complex, a designated UNESCO World Heritage Site, is visited by some 7 to 8 million people every year. From Agra, we headed to our final destination, Delhi. The timing of our arrival didn't allow for much sightseeing here. We did stop at Humayun's tomb, the first garden tomb ever constructed in India. It's said that this tomb, another UNESCO World Heritage Site, was the inspiration for the Taj Mahal. Although we were able to do a driving tour of Old Delhi, we didn't have time to visit any other sites. All in all, our very brief tour of Mumbai and the Golden Triangle was very enlightening. I learned a lot more than I ever expected. I would have liked to have had more time to really experience this culture, which is very different than our Western culture. If the opportunity presents itself for me to return to the subcontinent of India, I will absolutely say yes. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, be sure to share it with a friend. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you won't miss an episode. For more inspiration, visit my website, everygreatadventure.com, where you can also read my blog and see my travel photos. You'll find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest as Every Great Adventure. Of course, you can always reach me by email. My address, donna@everygreatadventure.com. Until next time, keep dreaming of your next great adventure.